Hi, Megan.
Hello. It's so nice to see your face
Welcome
again.
Welcome home.
Thank you.
I missed you.
I missed you, too. It was like when you left me to go to Austin for a week.
I know, and I haven't seen you in a week because you just went to...
Jackson Hole.
How was it?
Oh, it was so amazing. It was so fun. As you know, we road tripped with our friend Kelly, and she and I took all the kids and just did all the fun outdoor shit and went to National Park and...
Crashed a wedding, made friends with a moose.
Yeah, we did. The moose was more exciting than the wedding crashing.
Oh, well, that's unfortunate. Sorry, bride and groom.
Yeah. No, it was so great. And the place that we stayed, oh my God, it was fucking amazing. It's called the Bentwood Inn, B-E-N-T, Wood Inn.
Okay.
It's on Ravenhaven Road.
Ravenhaven?
Yeah. That was our joke. I was like, you have to say it fast. Ravenhaven.
Well, that's amazing.
I know. But it was just outside Jackson Hole. And as you know, we got this trip as like a package from the kids' school auction. There might have been a little drinking.
And that's how they get you to buy things at those auctions.
Precisely.
That was a couple of years ago, though, right? Like, and you had to put it off?
Yeah, we had to keep pushing it because of COVID. But because it was a package that had hotel and excursions and everything with it, we didn't really get to pick much, but we definitely didn't get to pick where we were staying. So we were like, well, we hope it's nice, you know?
Right.
And it was fucking amazing. It's beautiful inn, but also because there was this wedding, we were the only people staying there that weren't part of this wedding.
Oh, wow.
So they kind of had to put us in this suite that they had, this three-bedroom suite. I know, it was so awful.
So sad for you.
So it was gorgeous, and it was private and beautiful grounds. And, you know, we came home to a moose munching in the tree. You know, just very picturesque. The best part, though, was the innkeepers, Coleman and Melissa, rad, chill people. They would bring us wine and drive us to drop us off so we could go float on their days off or whatever. And just like super accommodating and made the best food. Mm. We literally would not eat at a restaurant in Jackson Hole because we're like, well, we want to eat at the inn.
Oh.
And the food came with the stay, you know, but it was just perfect. So damn good. We were like, no, we want to eat there.
It's like the best all-inclusive ever because normally the food at those places, you know, I'm thinking about the beach somewhere in Mexico at the all-inclusive resort and the food is shit.
Yeah, the food was badass at this
place. That's awesome.
And they were super accommodating of like, we have a dietary restriction and we had kids. And so they were asking the kids, instead of this fancy breakfast, would you like me to just make you some scrambled eggs with cheese and some toast? They knew like we just wanted the kids to eat, but then they would feed us like amazing shit. So
nice.
Anyway, it was bomb. We had such a good time and that inn was a big part of it. So
well, good. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm sorry that I didn't get to experience it myself. I just have a little bit of FOMO.
We can go back. I forgot to write my name in the guest book and say where
well,
we're from.
Well, then you have to go back.
I kind of have to.
Yeah, it's not actually a choice anymore.
That's true.
Great. Okay. Well, let's do that someday.
We'll put that on the calendar.
Perfect.
All right. So this episode was partially inspired by some shit we saw on The Bachelorette.
Well, you'd been talking about this topic for a while. You wanted to do this. And then
that's true. But this like pushed it to the forefront.
That's right. Because last week on The Bachelorette, and by the time this comes out, it will have been 2 weeks ago. One of the one-on-one dates was basically a two-person cuddle party.
Right. There was like a cuddle expert
like a
there.
Coach.
Yeah. And it was super awkward. And of course, you know, those evil producers, they always pick somebody who's not going to be comfortable.
They put her with the virgin to do that.
Right.
So yeah, that's.
Well, just because he's a virgin doesn't mean he may not like touch.
Of course not. No, but.
It definitely was not his jam.
No, the level of physical intimacy that a 31-year-old virgin has experienced
fair.
In his life is probably less than the other competitors.
Although I will say, I have experienced a fair bit more intimacy than he has. And the concept of the whole cuddle party weirds me out as well.
Yeah.
Which
it seems
apparently
really
is
weird.
A thing, by the way. Like, this
it
wasn't
is.
Something they just created for the show.
No. No. Okay, so our topic here is we wanted to talk about the need for physical touch. Human need for physical contact.
Right.
Then we saw this cuddling episode and we're like, all right, we got to do this. Let's get it done. And when we saw that, I was reminded that I had seen an article a few years ago. There was a place in West Seattle like a business you could go to in this little strip mall, or like a business park building, or I don't know, some shit called Cuddle Club.
Okay, it's even creepier that it's in a strip mall.
It was like a two-story office building, and like one of the office spaces was full of pillows and you could lay down with strangers. It was bizarre.
There's more rules than it sounds like.
Yes.
Which was fascinating to read about. One of the articles that I read from Business Insider.
I love that it was a Business Insider article. I know.
It was written by this gal named Katie Canals. I think it's how you say her name, from January of 2020.
So she got the last cuddle.
Probably.
Basically.
Yeah, she snuck in there.
Especially because she was in San Francisco.
Snuck in a cuddle. Well, and that's a part of why she did it. So
I was in San Francisco a month after that.
You could have gone to a cuddle club.
Well, I was there with my daughter. That would have been weird.
I got enough cuddling then. Just kidding. I know your daughter.
Aw, see, you know we're going to learn about her.
Not a huggers. We stick together.
Not a hugger. Yes, you're a cactus. We all know. Let's talk about it.
We will talk about it. Okay, this article says, cuddle parties are intimate gatherings where strangers meet, practice consent, and enjoy human touch. The events are non-sexual. Yeah, right. And while they may not be experiences for everyone, their message of proactive consent and communication can help build healthy relationships, trust, and confidence. So this gal decided that she was going to go check out this cuddle club, partially because she thought it was a little fascinating that she lives in Silicon Valley and that everybody there is living this fast-paced life. They don't have a lot of work-life balance. She says, "We're married to our electronic devices. And according to a 2017 Pew Research Center study, are waiting longer to find partners or start families, if at all. A valid decision, but one that can mean a lack of physical intimacy with a significant other." So she was talking about how, especially in that area where everyone's married to their device and they order their groceries online, like they really don't interact as much with people.
You're facing a screen all day long.
So, you know, there's perhaps a greater need for it. Mm-hmm. So she goes to this cuddle club place and there's all these things that they have to do before they can actually start cuddling. One of the things that they have to do is practice asking each other questions that you know the other person is probably going to say no to. Like, can I cut your hair? Mm-hmm. No. You do a lot of stuff like that.
Because actually, right now, yes, please, because it's too fucking long.
That's another side effect of COVID.
Yes.
But it basically is so that you can sort of warm up your no voice, is the way that I read it. Like, mm-hmm. you get used to saying, no, no, thank you. I don't want that. Whatever.
Right.
And by the way, there was apparently one person there who came to the party place. I don't know.
I mean, they call them cuddle parties.
Specifically because she wanted to practice consent, which is interesting. She said, there were about 7 clusters of platonic cuddlers in the space. Some were forming spoon drawers where multiple people curl around each other in one direction. Some were forming puppy piles.
Oh my God.
Others laid down with their body nested in another, whose body was nested in another, and so on, as a chain in a so-called human train.
No.
And so she says, consent is the focal point of the cuddle parties.
Yes, that I like.
Which are explicitly non-sexual. So before you touch anyone, you have to ask. She was saying, she's laying there and she's hearing all these people saying things like, can I touch your face? Can I rub your back? And they play music. I don't know that I totally believe that everybody is there for all the right reasons, you know, which is a bachelorette phrase as well. Everyone needs to be there for the right reason.
Each and every one of them needs to be there for the right reasons. Now, I am much more comfortable with physical contact in the world with, I was going to say random people, but that's not right.
People that are more strangers to you.
I mean, strangers, no, but I'm likely to go hug almost any one of my friends. I'm likely to meet someone at a barbecue, talk to them for 2 hours, and then want to hug them when I leave.
This is a flashback to our first episode. Exactly.
You are not that person.
I'm not a hugger. It says right in my bio.
Not a hugger. Now, even I have trouble with this idea. I'm struggling because it sounds so fucking uncomfortable and awkward.
Totally. And again, if I may defend myself for a moment, I hug the shit out of my kids. Mm-hmm. They hug me a whole lot.
Of course.
We'll talk about that some more later.
Yeah, too. We'll get there.
I will hug my friends. I hug people that I know well and I'm close to. I just don't like hugging people that are new to me.
I know.
The barbecue thing is a great example. And we talked about that and used that as an example before. You would meet someone at a barbecue, have a great chat, share a drink, whatever. And then when it's time to go, give them a hug and be like, nice meeting you. I would be like, hey, give them the head nod. Great to meet you. Right. Maybe I'll see you again.
That's not where it ends, though. And we don't need to get into this really, but say our close girlfriends all come over for a barbecue.
Yeah.
I'm thinking of four of us specifically.
I'm sure I know who those are.
Three of the four of us would be likely to hug upon entering and leaving.
Mm-hmm.
You being the fourth. Right? So it's not just
being
comfortable with hugging people you don't know very well. It's sort of a, it just, it's very natural for me.
Right.
To say hello and goodbye that way.
Yeah.
To people that I see all the time, even. Like, you and I don't do that, really, unless we know we're not going to see each other for a long time.
Well, you're respectful of my cactusness.
I try to be, yes. Also, thank you. I don't want to get pricked. Not by you.
I was going to say, wait a minute.
Not by you.
You are thirsty as fuck right now.
That's true. That's very fucking true. I would like some cuddling, please, but not from a,
not from a stranger
at a party.
That you have to be like, may I lay my head on your shoulder?
Now, okay, let's get back to that, because that is the part of all this that I love. And it's awkward as fuck, and I don't want to do it personally, but I like the idea that this arrangement environment is focused on and teaching people consent.
Sure, but
love that.
It's also pretty forced.
Well, but how do you learn something? You practice and practice and practice until it's natural, right?
Yeah, but I think you can practice talking about saying no and no meaning no without having to like put yourself in a situation where you're physically touching someone because you're laying on them and you're like practicing that way.
Okay, maybe. Yes, you can. But then there are all of these benefits to that physical touch. And if that is somebody who doesn't have an opportunity to have that physical connection with other humans in most of their life, then this might be a really good opportunity for them.
So I respect your argument. I still think it's weird.
No, I agree. I'm not going to go do it. But what I'm saying is, and the point of us talking about all this, is that there is a big benefit to human contact.
Sure. And we should talk about that for a second. So basically the reason why these cuddle clubs or cuddle parties sounds like a fucking Care Bear movie.
It's either that or it's really creepy. Like, those are the two options in my head.
Well, and that's what I'm saying.
No, I know.
There's probably people there that are really creepy.
Probably.
But anyway, the whole point is that you're supposed to go and get some oxytocin, which is the chemical or the hormone that your body releases when you get human touch. You get a little bit of a happy chemical, and it counteracts cortisol, which is
stress.
Right, the stress hormone. People that are touch deprived, there's other things that you can do. Like, some people get a pet.
You can go get a massage. You can get a mani-pedi.
If you are lonely, if you are craving some affection or some touch and you want that hit of oxytocin, then I guess you can go pay $15 or whatever it costs, $30.
I bet it's more than that.
To go to a cuddle club and partake in a cuddle party, except for COVID kind of shut that shit down. But I'm sure it will be back.
Well, the one in Seattle, well, I guess the only one I know of in Seattle was in West Seattle, and it has closed permanently.
Okay. Let me just say that when we decided to talk about this, we strongly agreed. Well, I'm speaking for you, but based on our conversation, I believe we came to this consensus.
Yes.
That human touch is important. It is valuable. It does make you feel better. We have had moments, both of us, where we're lonely and we crave it. So we're certainly not poo-pooing this or saying, we're just saying the cuddle parties are interesting and kind of weird. But beyond that, so I mentioned people that are starved for touch. Let's talk about what being touch-starved actually means.
Okay. Well, there's an article from Healthline called What Does It Mean to Be Touch Starved from April of this year. And it says that scientists have found a system of nerve fibers called C-tactile afferents that exist to recognize any form of gentle touch. And because those touches release oxytocin, which is also known as the love hormone, it's the same one when you're bonding with your baby, right? And we'll talk about that. It can be very helpful. It can reduce that cortisol, which actually allows your immune system to work the way it should. It can calm your body functions, such as heart rate and blood pressure. It can slow your nervous system. And so if you don't have that, there are a lot of things that, and it's more psychological, I think, but there is some physical stuff, because it can make it difficult to sleep. It can cause depression, obviously loneliness, anxiety, and ultimately like low relationship satisfaction. So if you have a relationship where there isn't a lot of touch and you're somebody who needs that, that's a problem, right?
Right. We talked about how some people get a pet, which mm-hmm. is interesting because during COVID, the number of adoptions for animals. Totally. So I got a cat. We're so cliche, but whatever, YOLO. but so many people got pets. Mm-hmm. I'm sure part of it was maybe it was a great time because they're going to be home
and
take care of the thing. Mm-hmm. But also the joy and the contact, they're referring to that in this article as something that sort of simulates human touch. So
right.
Petting an animal, taking long hot baths or showers, wrapping up in blankets, stuff like that. But another thing I thought was interesting in this article is that they talked about how in different countries, there is more propensity for like human touch.
Mm-hmm.
And in countries like the UK or the United States, we're kind of near the bottom. We value and promote independence. Like in a lot of cultures, multi-generational housing is very much a way of life. And in the United States, for example, it's very much like you grow up, you go spread your wings, right? You go out on your own, you're independent, you function and succeed as an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And so because that's promoted, we're not like a big touching country compared to others. So like Finland and France were near the top. France is where they like kiss you on both cheeks, right?
And that's true.
There's a lot of touch there.
Well, and that's called haptics, the study of physical contact and touching. When they study that, they look at like low contact and high contact countries.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like you said, the US and the UK, much of Asia, and then Canada, Australia, New Zealand were all the low contact countries. The higher contact countries were like Latin America and the Mediterranean.
Well, and this article, which was from April of 2021, like you said, so it's pretty recent, says that there are 35.7 million Americans who live alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I know friends of mine during the pandemic, especially during the worst of it, where everything was like really tightly locked down in the beginning, that are single and live alone, and they don't have kids there or another family to pot up with or whatever.
Right.
They spent a lot of time by themselves. And the ones that live in cities and live in apartments, they don't even have a yard or a balcony or anything. So they were going crazy and feeling very depressed because they were so lonely
deprived.
And just deprived of interaction mm-hmm. and touch. And definitely,
you know, Zoom happy hours can only go so far.
Right. Right. Okay. There's this other article on time.com that talks about the coronavirus outbreak, keeping humans from touching and why it's stressful.
Yeah.
It was written by Megan McCluskey in April of 2020.
Early. That's early pandemic.
Well, it's right after it happened. They were talking about how it's sort of a primitive function of ours as a
animal. We are animals.
As an animal, you know, to touch. And, you know, there's some mm-hmm. studies that show baboons and stuff, they touch each other like 17 hours a day or something on average.
They're
constantly like grooming and touching each other. And it like reduces social tension within the group and things mm-hmm. like that. They talk about how dancing, singing, or yoga is something that we've kind of evolved to because it's a way of simulating touch or interacting.
Oh.
And there's this global dance and wellness movement called Daybreaker. They originally started by doing things like dance parties for people that are sober, early morning dance parties. And they said, when you create a dance experience driven by music, community, and participation, that helps you release all four happy brain chemicals. Dopamine, oxytocin, serotonin, and endorphins. They would do these sober early morning dance parties in 28 cities around the world.
I know we have some here.
Well, that sounds fucking awesome. Like, what a great way to start the day. They had to shut all those down because of the pandemic. They got all these requests from people in their community to do it online so that they could at least have something. Their last couple of streams before this article was written, which is like $15 to attend, had thousands of people.
Oh,
like
wow.
People that aren't even necessarily part of this community, but just heard about it and wanted to feel that connection.
Everybody needed something.
Because they didn't have like that touch. And so mm-hmm. people are just starved for anything. Like, I'm going to get a fucking dog. I'm going to go to a sober online dance party.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. I want to connect with people.
Wow. Yeah. I didn't do any of those. Well, some of us, you, were lucky enough to have some touch still during the pandemic. It wasn't early on, you know, when everything was super shut down, but once things had opened up a little bit and maybe there was a possibility of meeting somebody, you got to do that. And that worked out well for you for a while.
Until it didn't. Yeah.
Well, right. That's how they always go.
Another one bites the dust.
Familiar. Okay.
Yes. I was fortunate to date a massage therapist.
That's like during the dream. I'm so fucking jealous.
I know. It's too bad it didn't work out.
God damn it.
But it was during a big chunk of the pandemic because he was a massage therapist and he loved being a massage therapist. Pretty much every time we saw each other, I got a massage or like we'd just be sitting there watching
TV. I fucking hate you.
Or a movie and I'd get like a foot massage. And there was a lot of human touch. It was fantastic because that was a very isolating, lonely time. Mm-hmm. And if you're single and you are not currently dating someone or not in a position.
I'm sorry, I don't understand. Explain that to me.
Oh my God, I can just feel daggers from your eyes right now.
I hate you.
Anyway, yes, so that honestly was one of the things that got me kind of starting thinking about this, even before we saw the episode of The Bachelorette with the cuddle expert or whatever the fuck she's called, because sadly it did not work out. Well, I missed a lot of things about that relationship. I did really miss having so much physical contact and human touch. And again, I'm not a hugger.
Right.
But this is somebody that I was dating. This is somebody that I knew well and trusted.
So I have a question.
Okay. Uh-oh. Mm-hmm.
I'm just wondering, because I happen to know that the frequency with which you saw this person was about once a week.
Yeah. I'm busy, okay?
Well, no, I know. And you've got your kids and
That was for them, not you.
Oh, okay. If that had been a more frequent thing, knowing you and the not a hugger, don't touch me all the time way that you are. If that was more often than once a week, do you think that you would have felt the same about it?
That's a tough question. I don't know. I really don't, because the amount of time that I spent with this person was more than I usually, sometimes it was more than once a week, to be clear.
That's true.
And overnight. And I haven't dated somebody like that for a minute. Like, it's been a while. And I thought, oh no, it's going to come on. I'm going to be like, ah, get away from me. You're spending too much time with me. Well, but actually, I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I sort of surprised myself. And maybe it's because it was a pandemic. I don't know.
Well, I mean, you can't separate it. So who knows?
Like, yeah, who knows? So I don't really know the answer to that question. In the past, I probably would have been like, oh yeah, it would have annoyed the shit out of me. But because I enjoyed more of that relationship than I expected to.
That's true.
Maybe I wouldn't have.
Mm-hmm. I just wonder, like,
too much of a good thing.
Well, yeah. If it was, and not that that person would have necessarily been your everyday and gotten to that point.
Right.
But
sweating just thinking about it.
Right. But if he had, I can imagine you after a while being like, thank you for wanting to massage me, but please fucking stop.
Well, interesting you should say that, because I do know somebody who is married and her husband shows her affection by like coming up and giving her little squeezes on the arm or when people aren't looking, it's sometimes on her boobs or her ass or whatever she jokes that he squeezes them like they're fucking water balloons. She says, I think he's just coming up like they're like little love squeezes, you know, but it drives her fucking nuts.
Have they been together for a long time?
Yeah, they have. And, you know, I asked her, like, have you talked about it? And I think she was trying to be tactful. He asked her if she minded. And she said, I like how much you like it. You know, like, I'm glad you're enjoying it. I think he took that as great.
That's the go ahead.
So there's a lot of squeezing. And she's like, you know, if squeezing is the only thing I really have to complain about, then whatever. But I definitely think there are moments where, like,
it's a lot.
Here comes the squeeze. And she's like, ugh, you know?
Oh, God. Wait, does he announce it when he comes up to do it?
No, he just.
Oh.
I think in her head, she's saying
that. No, I thought you meant he said that.
No. So, I mean, like, in the same way that, you know, maybe in the beginning it was fine or it was cute, but then now over time, it's like too much touching.
Right.
I mean, we have other friends like that.
Sure.
Whose partners are just like very touchy. And after a while, they're kind of like, just stop touching me.
Stop touching me.
I also think moms.
Well, that's the thing. That's what I was going to say.
Moms that have kids that are like constantly all over them.
Yes.
And then like the husband or her wife or whoever.
When is my body my own?
Right. They're just kind of like, can everyone stop fucking touching me?
They call that being touched out.
That's right.
Yeah.
Can I tag out? Because I'm all touched out.
Right. Yeah. That's a really common thing with moms because there's constantly a child, especially when they're younger, hanging off some body part, some limb, and you just have to do it.
Although, on the flip side, there is also an article from the Kinsey Institute called The Power of Touch. Physical affection is important in relationships, but some people need more than others. It's from May of 2020. They are talking about how non-sexual touching in couples' relationship promotes connection and relaxation while also building intimacy. So these sex therapists, who are like pioneers in this field.
I mean, it's the Kinsey Institute, so.
It said that in light of this, it shouldn't be surprising that Masters and Johnson found that by simply encouraging more touch, it was sometimes enough to solve a couple sexual problems. So basically they're saying if they just tell people, touch your partner more, it doesn't even have to be sexual, just common intimacy mm-hmm. or like reach out and make that connection.
Fake it till you make it.
It could be anything small, but
right.
Just the mere fact that these people are touching each other again regularly
right.
outside the bedroom is enough, not for everyone, obviously.
Well, right, because sometimes some there are bigger, deeper problems.
To like bring that connection back.
Right.
Because they just get used to touching and connecting again.
Yeah. That same article talked about our attachment styles and that being a predictor of whether you want more touch or not. Those attachment styles and patterns are shaped basically through your early life interactions with your parents and your caregivers. So if your parents were really hands-on and spent a lot of time touching you, sounds wrong. This is this instance.
Giving you like physical affection.
Yeah. And were huggers, then you are more likely to grow up to be that as well. You're also more likely to grow up with a more secure attachment style. I feel like we should do a whole other episode on attachment styles at some point, but there are four. The anxious attachment style will lead to someone craving more touch and that kind of like needy, please don't leave me scenario, right? And then an avoidant attachment style, as it sounds, will lead to don't touch me as much. They're uncomfortable with too much of that. And that's all based on how you came up.
Well, I certainly subscribe to some of that because in my family, we weren't huggers. You know, I didn't hug my parents a lot and it was normal. And us siblings didn't hug a lot and it just felt normal to us. Hugging was like when you saw your grandparents and you were leaving and you're not going to see them again probably for a year. That's when you hug someone.
Or when Aunt Gladys pinches your cheek and says you've grown so much and then you have to hug her. Don't do that to your kids, by the way.
We should talk about this concept of infants and young children and the influence in how they are raised, in how much physical touch they need. There was a study, I was reading about it in the Association for Psychological Science, and it was Harry Harlow's study, which is considered like a classic behavioral science study. He worked with primates.
In the, like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, early on, yes. At that time, it says, psychological research in the United States was dominated by behaviorists and psychoanalysts, and they thought that babies were attached to their mothers because they were a food supply for them, basically. So a baby is going to be attached to their mom because that's where they know they get food.
Nope.
And he argued that that perspective overlooked the comfort and love and companionship that they get from their mother. And so he did this experiment with infant rhesus monkeys. And so it's kind of sad, actually.
I really struggle with the way this was done. But again, it was the 50s and 60s.
So they took these infant monkeys away from their moms and they put them in a lab. And they had two basically what they called surrogate mothers.
Yeah.
So one of them was like this hard, cold wire and wood structure, but there was food access. And one of them was like soft terry cloth and other soft things. The infant monkeys, even if they did go to access the food from the harder structure, they would always return to like cuddle with and cling to the softer structure.
So fucking sad.
And it said when they isolated infants in separate cages away from their peers, the monkeys kind of deteriorated.
Mm-hmm.
They were like just staring blankly, circling their cages, and they even engaged in self-mutilation.
Yeah. They kind of become this depraved.
Depressed, right? Yeah. Lonely, isolated. So then when they reintroduced them into the group, they didn't know how to interact. They stayed separate, and some even died after refusing to eat. So again, sad. It sounds really harsh, but it's considered kind of groundbreaking in that.
It was. It really was.
It's not just the food. Like, that's not the only thing that they're connected to. They want that comfort.
I remember learning about that study in my like Psych 101 class in college.
So now they encourage, speaking of infants and with human infants and their mothers, the whole skin to skin thing after the babies are born.
I feel like the obvious answer, I'm using air quotes right now, to this whole like isolation and putting the monkeys with the wire moms and whatever is a much more close skin to skin, which can lead to kind of an attachment parenting thing.
Oh God, we got to talk about attachment parenting.
Yeah. And I struggle with that too.
Well, before we get to that, though, I feel like the skin to skin thing is kind of new. Like, I don't know that they were doing that when we were born.
Oh, I was going to say when my kids were born. Yes. Yeah, when our kids were born. When I was born.
They definitely encouraged it.
Yeah.
So not only does it help the infants with like heart rate and temperature, and it helps them relax after.
Yeah, it helps regulate breathing and heart rate, and definitely can like bring body temp up.
Right. And so they say that it helps the moms too. It reduces stress level.
Oxytocin.
Yeah, helps with depression. And then this was interesting. It says, mothers who have just given birth, their skin on their chest is a degree or two higher than the rest of their body, creating a natural warming area for the newborn. They have the ability to thermoregulate for the baby. If the baby's temperature drops, the mother's temperature rises. And if the baby's temperature rises, the mother's drops. So there's this connection that's there inherently.
Can I just take a minute, please?
Yes.
And say how fucking magical we are.
Yes.
Because
please keep saying it.
Amazing.
And we are. I'm just going to take a drink to that right now.
Take a drink.
Cheers.
Cheers
to all these fucking moms.
Cheers to all the moms. Oh, I immediately feel bad because cheers to all the other caregivers out there who didn't birth their own children. But God damn it.
Yeah.
We've been through some shit.
We're not saying they're not amazing.
That's true.
Just because this situation is amazing doesn't mean they're not for a million other reasons that we won't be.
Because it's not about you.
That's right. See episode
24?
I don't know.
Seven? Something.
We have a whole episode on that.
Anyway, the other thing that makes me think of when you're talking about the temperature rising to accommodate is, and this didn't work for me because I was not really able to breastfeed, but how if a baby is sick, if they have a cold, whatever it is, the mother's fucking breast milk will react. The baby's mouth on the boob will give the signals to the mom through the nipple.
Yeah.
And the breast milk will change to accommodate what the fucking baby needs in that moment. And that shit is incredible. And I didn't get to really do that.
Yeah.
So I'm not even one of those magical people, but
well, I am magical in that way. And I will tell you, that kind of shit is why you have to buy these pads to put in your bras, because even just hearing a baby cry, not even your own baby, is enough to make you start leaking milk.
You want to hear some insult to injury shit?
Oh, God.
I had that problem without really being able to feed my fucking babies.
God's sakes. So speaking of, they're also finding that doing the skin-to-skin thing is really helpful for moms who want to breastfeed, because it's part of the baby's natural instinct for like soothing and then to get that colostrum, you know, when they're first born.
Oh, yeah.
To seek it out and start nursing. And this article said a 2012 study published in the journal Neonatology showed that 95% of mothers who spent skin-to-skin time were breastfeeding exclusively 48 hours after delivery, and 90% were still breastfeeding exclusively 6 weeks later.
Yeah, I'd be in that other percent.
Well, I mean, it's a big deal because a lot of people who breastfeed still have to supplement with formula because it's hard. I mean, people think that breastfeeding is a piece of cake.
I mean, it's the most natural thing in the fucking world, right?
But it's still really hard.
Right. You hear it's the most natural thing in the world and you think then it's going to be easy.
No.
Nope.
It's not.
No. Sometimes your body just doesn't fucking cooperate.
Right. So there was another study that I wanted to mention. We're talking about infants and young children. that was cited in a bunch of articles, and it's talking about children from an orphanage in Romania in the 1980s.
Yeah.
These kids were anywhere from ages 6 to 12. They had lived in orphanages for more than 8 months. They had really high levels of cortisol, the stress hormone.
It's so fucking
sad. And then when they were adopted out and placed into homes, even after 3 years in a family home, that early deprivation of touch and connection caused them to still have lower levels of oxytocin and some of those other, you know, hormones that we talked about.
Because you build those pathways during those initial, like, wonderful mommy touches or whatever. That sounded weird. You know what I'm saying?
Right. So the researcher said, this environmental change into a home does not seem to have completely overridden all of the effects of early neglect.
Yeah.
So they're basically saying that if these children are neglected and deprived of this human touch and connection during a young age, even if they go into a home, it doesn't automatically change that. I mean, it's probably going to take years and it may never fully.
Because those earliest experiences are the ones that form your brain.
Right. I mean, there's so much development. Your brain is developing so rapidly at those young ages that neglect can leave some serious internal scars, obviously.
And if you end up in an orphanage at 8 years old, chances are good that when you were younger than that, things weren't great.
What do you think about the concept of attachment parenting?
Well, that's what I was going to say.
Let's talk about what it is.
Because we got to get back to that, because all of these examples of how terrible it is if you don't have touch leads to what's the opposite. You should do all the things for your kid and touch them all the time. Go ahead and describe it, but I struggle.
Okay, this is straight from WebMD.com. Attachment parenting focuses on the nurturing connection that parents can develop with their children. That nurturing connection is viewed as the ideal way to raise secure, independent, and empathetic children. There are some well-known pediatricians like William Sears that are proponents of
it. Dr. Sears.
And they say that secure, trusting attachment to parents during childhood forms the basis for secure relationships and independence as adults. Which is interesting to me, independence, because it's not a very independent approach, but...
No, not at all.
There are 8 principles to attachment parenting.
So I wrote 4 of them down, and I have some comments about those 4.
Okay, well, I will start reading the 8, and then when you have some comments, you just chime in.
Okay, great.
The first one is prepare for pregnancy, birth, and parenting.
Because you wouldn't do that otherwise. Sorry, I might have comments about more than 4 of them. Okay, let me preface all of this by saying I do not judge anyone for their choice if this is what worked for them.
You sound judgy, though.
No, but listen. For me, it was not the right choice. For
well,
some
you
people,
you do have a mini cacti, so.
Well, yeah. She wasn't when she was a baby, though.
Okay.
But I do understand that my experience is not everyone's experience, and so... Whatever works for you and your family is what you need to do. And I believe that wholeheartedly. And this is not for me. And so everything I'm going to say from here on out, please understand that it's my perspective for me. I'm not judging.
It's bitchy comments in a bubble. It's in Michelle's bubble.
I want to apologize in advance. If this was you, I'm not talking about you. I'm talking about my experience.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, so after your preparation, it says, this is still number one. Proponents of attachment parenting believe it is important to eliminate negative thoughts and feelings about pregnancy. I failed.
Yeah, right.
Doing so, they say, readies a parent for the emotionally demanding work of being a parent. Okay, I take issue with this.
Exactly.
No, and not even from an attachment parenting principle or whatever. I truly believe that if you've never had a child, no matter what you do to prepare yourself,
you're not going to fucking know.
Whatever classes you take, however much you take care of your niece and nephew or whatever, nothing can prepare you for the hormones, the sleep deprivation, the total
physical changes to your body.
Well, yeah, I mean, just even the process of giving birth, whether it be cesarean section, which is major surgery, or natural childbirth. I mean, you are in pain. You are bleeding. You are crying. You are exhausted. Nothing can prepare you for that. So this I find a little funny.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'm moving on to number 2.
Okay, I'm ready.
Number 2.
feed
with love and respect.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Breastfeeding, proponents say, is the ideal way to create a secure attachment.
Mm-hmm.
It also teaches infants that parents will listen to their cues and fulfill their needs. Okay, I have a question about this.
I struggle with this. Please ask your question.
Wasn't it Alicia Silverstone who'd practiced attachment parenting and she would chew her kid's food and then spit it into his mouth?
Yeah, that's not breastfeeding, though. That's a whole other fucking level.
He was like a toddler.
Side note, there's a whole SNL skit about this. Have you seen it?
No.
It is the funniest shit I've ever seen. Juliana Margulies was the guest, and it's...
Oh, yeah, I have seen it. As soon as you said her name,
Will Ferrell. I think it's Will Ferrell doing it. He's the boyfriend, and he brings her home to dinner, and their entire family, like, chews up and regurgitates like birds, and she's like, what in the fuck?
That. You should post a link.
I'll try to find a link. It is the funniest thing because they're all dying laughing. None of them can keep a straight face.
Well, would you?
Absolutely not. No.
But she legit fed her kid that way. She put the food in her mouth, chewed it up, and then spit it into his mouth like he was a baby bird.
Not okay. I'm sorry.
I don't think all parents who practice attachment parenting do that.
No. Definitely not. Definitely not. But okay, so here's the thing. This one particularly pisses me off because, and there's a whole lot of in the, you know, quote, mommy wars, whatever, breast is best, all that shit. Okay, yes, breast milk is very advantageous for the children. 100% true. However,
it's going to Harvard, but not everyone can do it.
Right. Yes, that's the thing. Not everyone can do it. I went into the whole parenting thing with expectations like everybody does, and I fully intended to breastfeed my kids for at least a year. And I was not able to. We started supplementing after 2 weeks because my kids were starving.
Right.
And by 3 months, I had dried up completely because once you're supplementing, the levels just, it doesn't fucking work out. And as much as I wanted to do it, and quote, breast is best, it just wasn't possible. So when it says feed with love and respect.
Condescending.
Right. And what that equals is breastfeed on demand. Fuck you. Sorry.
I would just like to say to the whole condescending breast is best thing, if you actively choose not to breastfeed for whatever
reason. That's also fine.
That's fucking fine,
too. That's fine, too.
You may need to because you're like a public defender and you're in court and you can't just leave to feed your baby or whatever. Like,
yeah, and pumping is a fucking nightmare.
There are amazing women who pump breast milk and donate it, even for women who are like, I can't breastfeed, but I want to feed my baby breast milk. I mean, there's all these options. Or maybe you just choose not to and you feed your baby formula and they turn out fine.
Yes.
It's called science and we all subscribe here.
And that's fine too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ooh, I'm right in your bitchy bubble.
Thank you.
I'm in here with you.
I'm really appreciative of that. I feel it. And you know what? When I couldn't breastfeed my second kid, just like the first one, it was the same schedule of all of it, like within 2 weeks and then by 3 months, the whole thing, same for both of them.
The difference usually is that the first time something like that happens, you feel like a failure. And the second time you're like, yeah, formula will be fine.
I was a motherfucking wreck. Yes. But the second time I had a good friend who had a daughter right around the same time I had my son. Her daughter ended up having a ton of food sensitivity issues, which meant that the breast milk that my friend had been pumping was not suitable for this child because it had, you know, gluten and soy and anything in it. She could not have. So she ended up giving some of that to me.
Yeah.
And I gave my son her breast milk because it was something. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'll take it. Anything I can get, great. But like the pressure. Oh, it pisses
me
off.
And then there's on the flip side, as a mom who did breastfeed, P.S. Michelle and I have both been watching Sex Life, which I just finished, by the way.
Oh my God, you beat me. I stopped. I don't know why. I forgot to keep watching.
You're going to die at the last episode.
Oh no.
Okay, have you seen the episode when they're having sex and she needs to nurse and so she starts spraying breast milk on her husband?
Yes.
That fucking happens for real.
Yeah.
And so if you are a breastfeeding mom, that is really tough and amazing. And then sometimes you get like infections and it's all hard and it's all like whatever works for your family, like you
said.
That's
the thing.
So there's nothing wrong with choosing to breastfeed. There's nothing wrong with choosing not to breastfeed. We're totally getting away from human touch. But
Sorry.
The reason why we're talking about this whole attachment parenting thing is because it is considered a, quote, high touch parenting method. So anyway, the next one, number 3, respond with sensitivity. With attachment parenting, parents consider all expressions of emotions, including repeated tantrums, as real efforts at communication. Those efforts are to be taken seriously and understood rather than punished or dismissed.
I think that is a good goal to strive to.
I feel like I shouldn't make any comments about that.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay, next one. Use nurturing touch. Here we go. See, it all circles back.
Okay, go ahead. This one I feel like I can get on board with.
Attachment parenting proponents advise maximum skin-to-skin touching. Ways to achieve that include joint baths and baby wearing.
Never mind.
Carrying babies during the day in a front-facing sling.
Front-facing?
Yeah.
Okay, so this is completely off fucking topic, but interesting that they're saying that because there's a lot of hip issues in the front-facing carriers unless they have the, like, lift the legs the right direction, blah, blah, blah. They're supposed to face you and cuddle to your body, not face out to the world. I used a fucking baby Bjorn and my kids faced out, so I'm breaking the rules already.
I had a baby Bjorn and I don't fucking remember.
Exactly.
I was too tired. I don't remember.
Yeah.
What do you think about the joint bathing?
I mean, I did it when my kids were like really little, like the first month or two.
I don't think this means only when they're really little. I think it means continue.
No. Mm-mm. Okay. I'm out.
Well, maybe someone who practices attachment parenting can tell us.
Please do. Okay. And again, we're not fucking judging. This just did not work for us.
We sound judgy, but
I know we probably do.
Keeping it real. Okay, next. Engage in nighttime parenting.
I have comments.
Okay, let me finish.
Okay.
Attachment parenting experts advise making co-sleeping arrangements. Mm-hmm. With co-sleeping, an infant sleeps in the same room with parents so they can feed and emotionally soothe the child during the night. Some parents practice bed sharing or sleeping in the same bed with babies, but be aware that currently the American Academy of Pediatrics advises against this as it may increase the risk of sudden infant death syndrome or SIDS. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I don't know a single parent who has never brought their kid into bed with them because it's so exhausting. I mean, you try not to, but especially if the baby is sick or something and you want to keep an eye on it.
I will say that I can probably count on two hands the number of times with two kids that I have brought them into my bed with me.
But it wasn't never, right?
It wasn't never, but it's been minimal.
Yeah.
Because I don't sleep well.
Okay. It's not about
being dangerous. It's not always because you're snoring.
Wow. Here we go.
Again, this for me is one of those, like, if your family sleeps better when you co-sleep, then do that because get whatever fucking sleep you can. For me, that was not an option. My daughter was in a bassinet in our bedroom for the first month and I fought through it and did not sleep for a month because I could hear everything. I could hear my husband. I could hear my baby. I could hear, and I didn't sleep. And so finally I was like, sorry, you're going to your crib. And I would still wake up the second she fucking woke up and made a noise. Even in a different room.
We live in the U.S., so we are proponents of being individuals.
I couldn't do it. Well, okay.
Next one is provide constant loving care. Mm. Proponents of attachment parenting advise the nearly constant presence of a parent.
I wrote the sentence down. Go ahead.
That includes during walks, parents' night out, and work.
What? Sorry.
They advocate against childcare for more than 20 hours a week for babies younger than 30 months old.
30 months is 2.5.
That sounds pretty privileged, doesn't it?
So fucking privileged.
Like, that's not really a choice for a lot of people.
It's not. And I'm okay. Okay.
I'm just going to take a drink while you gather yourself.
Okay. What number was that?
That was 6.
So there's one in between that and the one I want to yell about too, because they go together.
So there's two more.
So, okay. So nearly constant presence. They genuinely mean you're always touching the baby.
Well, I'm kind of confused about how this is supposed to make the kids so independent.
Well, that I don't understand, other than the fact that they might gain a secure attachment style from it based on our earlier reading, right?
Okay.
But the fact that it says nearly constant presence of a parent includes during parents' night out. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What Seattle Gymnastics Academy is for.
Right? Most people do not have the luxury of taking their kids to work and actually being able to do their jobs.
Right.
Most people. right?
This is a very privileged statement. Like, who can really say, well, I had a kid, and so now I'm going to limit childcare to 20 hours a week until my baby is 2.5.
2.5. Imagine taking your kid to work. Like, okay, when they're a baby and you can wear them, maybe that's one thing. Like, they still require a lot, but at least they're not running around. And then you have a toddler at work? No.
I just don't understand. Like, that's not very healthy for the parent either.
That's the thing.
Like, you have to maintain some sense of yourself, okay, right?
So can we have to go through 7 and 8 because I have comments about we get to 8.
Moving on to number 7.
Okay.
Practice positive discipline.
Great.
Parents.
No, that one. Yeah, that's
okay,
fine.
Okay. Parents are advised to distract, redirect, and guide even the youngest of babies and to model positive behavior. Attachment parenting aims at understanding what a child's negative behavior is communicating, and parents are encouraged to work out a solution together with the child rather than spanking or simply imposing their will on children. Well, that last part of that sentence was pretty much how I grew up.
Well,
that's how kids were raised.
Yeah. Number one, it was the 80s. Number two, it was Montana. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Only the winning teams got trophies there, just so you know.
Right. Yeah. That I actually do agree with that. Not the give everybody a trophy, but the idea that a tantrum is an actual expression of a feeling that is valid and not just being like, don't cry, shut up, you're being loud, whatever. Validating that to some extent, not if it's a million times in a row, but trying to understand where that's coming from and help them work through emotions rather than telling them not to have emotions, that I get.
Yeah, that's interesting. I hear what you're saying. I also think, though, in terms of behavior, that children do need to learn what behavior is appropriate when and where.
Totally.
And who they need to be respectful of.
Yes, but they're not always in control of it. Like, yeah, we make the assumption.
We might be envisioning different ages for this, too.
Well, true. But, like, even now, our kids at the preteen level, right?
Yeah.
Their brains are literally reforming, and they have reverted, I'm not joking, to a toddler sensibility. It's fucked up. We're all in trouble. Yeah. But there are so many times in their lives where, because there's so much growth happening, they're not capable of the kind of reasoning that we would want them to be capable of. Knowing that has helped me keep in mind that they need help navigating the emotions rather than like shutting them down. That's not to say that it's appropriate to have a huge outburst, you know, at, I don't know where, a wedding or a funeral or the State of the Union, but.
Harkening back to our last episode, check it out. Well, we always say everything's a spectrum, right? And so I sort of envision this as like what I just described being on one end and absolute zero tolerance being on the other. And I'm probably in a different place on the spectrum than you. But I also think it's all relative, right? Like,
yes.
What is provoking the behavior?
Right.
And if it's something ridiculous, my tolerance level is going to be a little lower. Like, I wanted green grapes, not red grapes.
Right.
I don't
wanted
care
the purple bowl.
How you want to express that to me? I'm not having it, fair. So.
Yeah, the need for a particular color spoon. Which is a big thing for most kids. Yep. I know all the parents out there will relate to that. That's some bullshit.
Yeah.
And I have gotten to a point where I try to remember that there's something more behind that. It's not just about the color of the spoon. It's not easy to remember, but I do think that I have a higher tolerance for it than a lot of people.
Definitely than me.
Well, but I have a son with autism.
Yeah.
That has these things and
there's different reasons.
Right.
Though,
I'm never going to know why the fuck it's really important that his left foot be on this spot on the ground. Like, I don't know. I'm making that up. But you know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
I have had to learn a level of patience with that stuff that I didn't know I was capable of, frankly.
Well, I guess you could say what you were saying before, like what works for your family. I mean,
yes.
For some people, for some reason, that it's different than whatever my reasons are, this attachment parenting style might work well for them.
Right.
Whereas you also have to have certain parenting style as the mom of a child that has autism that maybe somebody like me doesn't have to have. So like,
you lucky bitch.
I know.
I'm kidding.
I understand that. And I kind of remember my sister telling me that it was hard when her son was younger in public because people would assume that behavior was a result of just a, you know, poorly disciplined child.
Yes.
When really it is the result of something else that they don't know shit about. You know, and
fucking
so
right.
Comments, looks, you know, attitude.
Advice. With an air quote.
advice. That kind of stuff. It's like,
yeah.
You don't fucking know.
Well, that's the thing is you don't, none of us know anything about anybody else's life, really. So again, if this shit works for you, good for you.
This shit.
It doesn't work for me.
If this shit that I hate works for you,
I'm sorry.
You should do
I'm
it.
Sorry. I feel like a bitch, but also it doesn't work for me.
Okay, well.
Okay, say the last one because I have comments.
The last one. Okay, number 8. Strive for balance in personal and family life.
Can we just repeat that because that's fucking hilarious.
Strive for balance in personal and family life, especially when you take your kid on Parents Night Out.
Exactly.
Parents are encouraged to create a support network, live a healthy lifestyle, and prevent parenting burnout. How do you do that?
Okay. Can we please?
Yeah.
Okay. So when I have to take my kid everywhere, nearly constant presence, not allowed to have childcare, they are on me all the time. They're co-sleeping with me. I wear them to work and I'm striving for balance? What?
You know, for us being single moms, striving for balance is kind of hilarious.
Right.
The whole concept of being a single parent, I mean, to me, this feels like a very specific
and privileged, like you
privileged.
Said. Yes.
So there's this other article that says, and I want to tie this back in, it's from lifegate.com, and it's called Thanks to High Touch Parenting, Your Infant Will Be an Independent Adult, from October of 2015. It's talking about attachment parenting being high-touch parenting. And it says, this type of parenting style usually, but not necessarily, involves breastfeeding on demand, baby wearing, self-weaning, which means they stop breastfeeding when they want, even if that's at like 4, and co-sleeping. And it says, more generally, this is an educational choice that aims to recognize and accommodate the needs of infants and children by taking into account their instinctive requests, being held, sleeping with mom and dad, eating what their parents eat. Yeah, right. Getting closer to the breast.
Sorry.
Even if they aren't hungry.
I have to make 3 dinners every fucking night. I don't. Okay. What?
Natural and psychological needs and avoiding bad habits. Many parents, in addition, consider the choice of high-touch parenting as a return to more natural and sustainable parental practices, a return to primitive instincts and ancestral customs they share with most mammals, including, first of all, primates.
Well, that's true. Okay. I want to argue with that and say, but like, we've evolved and have technology and
shit. Yeah, I mean, they don't have jobs.
Right.
You can pick at your kid's head all day long if you don't have a job.
And the iPad can babysit my son. It's fine.
I have a feeling they would really like the iPad.
The primates?
Yes.
Absolutely.
King Kong? Be on all day.
Oh, my God. Okay. This is one of those things to me that just feels like I'm having reactions based on, I don't have babies, right? The last baby I had was 8 years ago. I don't live in that world anymore, but I remember the pressure to be your kid's everything all the time. I remember that. And yeah. I'm still reacting to that, I think.
And I remember feeling like, you know, you're losing yourself.
Yes.
And becoming this parent.
Yes.
And when you try to make everything all about the baby all the time, it's typically a strain on the marriage. And it's typically not good for your mental health, in my experience.
Agreed. Me too.
So I don't personally think that an attachment parenting style would have worked well for me. And I don't think it would have been good for my mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And I was the breadwinner in our family. So I had to go to work.
Right.
You know, and I have pumped literally on an airplane, on a train, on a ferry, during a mediation.
In a box with a fox? In a house with a mouse?
That's what it feels like. That mouse just sat and watched me do it.
I do not like it, Sam, I am.
I did not like it, Michelle, my friend. But the thing was, is that like, that's what I had to do at the time. So I think that that is a very lofty list.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can accomplish it and it makes you happy,
right?
Like you like it, you feel like your family is thriving, mm-hmm. including you, then I think it would be very interesting to have a conversation with you about it.
Let us know.
I don't know. For me, I can't imagine practicing that and my family thriving, but every family is different.
Right.
And I would be very curious to hear how it works for people without it being like a sales pitch to do it, you know?
Right.
I'd just be curious to hear about the experience.
I think that's part of my problem with it is it always feels like a fucking sales pitch.
Well, it's kind of like the breast is best thing.
Yes.
It's like, so if you choose something else, you're automatically a shitty parent.
Just know you're choosing the wrong thing.
Even formula companies are like, yeah, we know. Breast is best. Like they will say it and they'll be like, but because that shit doesn't always work,
right.
Here's the next best thing.
Or you've adopted or you know, the kid's mom died and the dad
or
has to feed them or whatever.
Some medication that you have to take and it can't transfer to your kid. You know,
so many reasons.
Yeah. Anyway, it's weird because it sounds like we're talking out of both sides of our mouth. On one hand, we're being like judgy bitches. And then on the other hand, we're being like, back off, everyone. Do what's right for you.
But you all get it.
We're personalizing a lot of this based on our own experiences. And we know that.
Can I just real quick? I today was listening to a podcast that's under the Armchair Expert umbrella. That is Kristen Bell. And Monica Padman, who is the woman who works with Dax Shepard on Armchair Expert. So the two of them.
Tell me about this.
That they have started. Well, no, I told you about the one Monica Padman and their friend Jess. And they did Monica and Jess Love Boys.
Oh, yeah.
Which that's also, the one you told me about. If anyone's in the dating world, fucking go listen to that podcast. It's only 10 episodes. It's great.
Okay.
Anyway, this one is Kristen Bell and Monica Padman. They were originally calling it Shattered Glass. I think it's now been changed. The name's been changed. I'm not sure why, but to We Are Supported By. I don't know.
Okay.
But today I was listening to them talk to Samantha Power, who was high up in the Obama administration. She's been in government for a long time. I don't remember exactly her credentials, so forgive me. But their whole thing is talking about women paving the way for other women.
Okay.
Their first episode was talking to Gloria Steinem. And then their second episode was Malala. And then Oprah. And then Samantha Power, who is like Kristen's personal fucking idol. And she was telling a story about being in Myanmar. There was like six high-level government people, President Barack Obama, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, a couple other people, and her. And they're in the home of, I'm not going to remember if it's a president or a fucking emperor or whatever, of Myanmar, this woman. And they're in this meeting, and she was a breastfeeding mom at the time and was like ready to fucking explode.
Uh-huh.
And you don't just get up and leave that room.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. Like, and I think the way Kristen Bell put it was like, no, your skin's about to rip. You're exploding.
Oh, yeah.
So that I never really experienced.
It's real stretched skin.
Right. That, yeah, I didn't really get
like
that. But
you have water balloons that are full.
Right.
And people keep putting more water in
squeezing
there.
The water balloon.
Nobody turned the fucking faucet off.
So eventually they got, I don't remember what she called it, but like slimming down the group in the room. So it went down to just this president of Myanmar, Obama and Clinton, and everybody else got to leave. And she's like, oh, thank God. Okay. So she can go run out to the Secret Service fucking motorcade and get her pump and all that and run into the bathroom. And then she's like pumping in this woman's bathroom. And when I say this woman, I mean the fucking president of a country.
Yeah.
And she's pumping. And then she said that she was trying to figure out like, okay, so I don't know where everybody's at this point. I've been in this bathroom for a while, whatever. Yeah. And she like pulls the curtain open in the bathroom and looks outside. And she's essentially behind a podium with the two presidents and a bunch of press looking in the direction of the bathroom. And she's got boobs and pump, like the things on her nipples.
Like, right.
Just ridiculous. Like the fact that you're the high level government shit and women are still having to do this stuff and it's still a go hide in the bathroom to do it kind of scenario.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway.
Well, that was another thing that I appreciated about that show, Sex Life, because, you know, it's so, like, it'll show her getting ready to, like, go, you know, out for a night with her husband or something.
But she's pumping.
And she's got her pump, mm-hmm. like, strapped to the front of her, so she looks hot as fuck. But then it's like, she's pumping.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the noise that it makes, too. Yeah, I remember, like I said, I pumped during a mediation, and I was there with an attorney that I, you know, respected a lot. And I said, I have to go make a phone call, because we didn't anticipate the mediator to be back in our room for a while. So I went into the bathroom and pumped and came back. And it was a long day. We were there for like 8 hours or something. And I kept doing that. And he was totally on to me, because I'd pick up, you know, the black bags that look like purses, but they have pumps inside. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure he knew exactly what I was doing. But it was just like, this is what you got to do.
But you know? Why do we fucking hide it too? Like, what is that?
It's probably, you know, it's some people are very open about it. And I think you and I have talked about this before, not on this podcast, but like, I didn't really feel like telling this guy that I had a professional relationship with, like, I'm going to go pump milk out of my boobs. Like, fair. Even if he knew,
yeah,
that's my like private thing. I didn't need him envisioning that. And then, you know, it's just like some people are comfortable just whipping it out and feeding their baby in public. And I think
you probably think I was doing that, huh?
No, I
covered up.
I don't know. I think that's awesome, but I personally would not be comfortable doing that. Not because I'm ashamed of it, because that's like private. I don't want to whip it out in front of everybody, you know, for the purpose of feeding my child. Mm-hmm. If I was at a bar or something, that might be a different story. But
if I took my bra off to get $2 and you pinned it on the wall, that's a different story.
$2? I wouldn't even buy you a drink.
I don't know why.
I don't know. This is circle in the two.
This has been Parenting with Megan and Michelle.
Oh, God, that took a turn.
It really did.
But it, you know, all circles back to touch and contact. Mm-hmm. And it does start when you're young. And
I still am thirsty.
And it's not because she didn't get hugged as a child.
Really not.
She just is in desperate need for some human contact.
It's got to be the right human contact, though.
Oh, see, that's part of the problem. You are so damn picky.
Well, I'm not, like, so damn picky, but I also am not in it for the one-night stands anymore. I've done that. I'm over it.
Oh, you better...
I'm over it.
Eat your words.
Okay.
You're going to say you're never going to have a one-night stand again?
I didn't say I'm never going to. I said I'm not in it for that.
You said you're over it.
Okay.
This is, like, three glasses of Prosecco. Jesus. Three glasses of Michelle Prosecco talking. Give her a few more and this answer might change.
Is someone going to appear in your basement for me? Because I don't...
Maybe. We're putting this out there. My address is... No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, hey. Anyway.
Okay. Well, this has been enlightening.
We talked a lot. Clearly, I missed you because you weren't here for a week, because we just talked for a very long time.
Okay, I missed you too.
Aw.
Sorry I had to leave you. Sometimes that happens.
You know what? You guys had a great time. I got to see a picture of a moose.
That's right.
I learned about a great place in Jackson Hole.
I sent you a Marco Polo of that moose, too.
That's true.
Risked my life. I legit had to explain to the kids how dangerous moose are. They didn't understand.
Do not walk near the moose.
Well, they think it's like a deer. And I'm like, no, it's actually probably more dangerous than a bear. And it will kill you. It can kick you one time and you will die.
Don't go there.
So stay farther back from it. So I stayed a respectable distance and then just zoomed in with my camera to get you that great shot.
It was great. I appreciated it.
Anyway.
Okay.
Go to Jackson Hole. Stay at the Benwood Inn. Tell Coleman and Melissa. I said, hey, have some drinks with them. They're the best.
I'm going to do it.
And while you're there, order some Prosecco Theory merch.
From Tee Public. Oh, by the way,
Michelle's wearing some right
just
now.
Just ordered my own Prosecco Theory merch.
I like it.
Thank you. I am wearing the Racerback tank top for all who are interested. And I will say, it runs a little small. So
it's really hugging you in all the right places.
It is. And normally I would put on a large and it would be perfect. And this is an extra large. And it's definitely fitted.
Designed to be tight in that area.
It's meant to be fitted for sure.
Okay.
Which is fine.
Okay.
But I'm just saying most of us probably wouldn't want to go down a size.
Well, you know, most people don't have the size of your rack, so.
I got good boobs, man.
You do.
I mean, did you hear that, guys? Sorry.
She will stop at nothing.
Nothing. God damn it.
Maybe you should reduce your level of pickiness just until you get past this phase. You need some oxytocin.
No. Well, then cuddle with me.
Oh, God.
Wait. Really quick.
I'll go get a cat for you to cuddle with.
I have cats.
I have two running around here.
I cuddle with my cats. Just before we go away, I have to say that I read, I think it was that Healthline article from before. It says, according to a 2017 study, the ideal touching speed is about 3 centimeters per second.
Oh, for fuck's sake. Whoever made up the phrase, breast is best, wrote that too.
The ideal touching speed. Yes. But while putting my son to bed the other day, he was like just lightly like touching my upper arm and like rubbing his fingers back and forth.
Yeah.
And I found myself like, oh. And I was like, wait, this is weird. Is it weird?
No.
Maybe it's fine. It felt so good. And it's been, you know, like I'm just cuddling with my kid.
Yeah.
I guess that's a good replacement. If you don't have a partner, cuddle with your kids.
So I remember somebody telling me that when I was going through a divorce and they were saying to combat the loneliness and depression, like really, you know, get a lot of like hugs from the kids and like physical contact with them because it helped.
Yeah. So. Yeah, it does. Thanks, kid.
Knew I had you for some reason.
Okay.
So all right. Do your sales pitch.
Okay, everybody. Hey, come on down to the social media. Oh, we're at Prosecco Theory.
No.
If you can see her, she's blushing with embarrassment for me. Find us online at prosecotheory.com. And please, if you have been or are an attachment parent and would like to share your experience with us.
Or tell us to fuck off.
We would love to hear your experience or you're yelling at us. Either one. Let us know.
Reach out. Reach out and touch someone.
Yes. Ba-dum-bum. Megan, welcome home.
Thank you.
I'm glad to see you. I won't cuddle, I promise.
Oh, thank you.
Let's go watch The Bachelor.
Okay. Cheers.